This is Daffy Duck, and you're listening to, what's my line?
Pay attention, boy. You're listening to the Movie Rob Minute Podcast.
Yes, that one. Keep on listening.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 81 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is John from Dirty Harry Minute. Welcome back to the show for this season, John.
Thank you very much. Glad to be back. I had a lot of fun the last time with planes, trains, and automobiles. Happy to be of assistance this time.
Oh, you had less fun in Great Escape then? Is that what you're saying?
I think all you gotta be careful what you say. No, I think it's no secret that I love both movies, but I just had I had a great time with planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah. I had a great time with both. So, and with this one. So, you know, that's for me, that's a no brainer, you know, because I obviously am the one who chose to do these movies. So, yeah. All right. We'll just make sure that, you know, next time you come here, you come to negotiate.
No worries, Bubby.
Bubby. We'll get there. All right. So Minute 81 begins with Ellis entering Holly's office and ends with Ellis beginning to take a seat. So a lot has been going on over the course of the movie. There's a lot of different threads. Almost this entire week, we're just going to have one little thread, one new thread that we're dealing with. You know, at the end on Friday, Ellis said that he's going to take matters into his own hand. And he's going to save everybody. And that's what he basically says to Holly. And then he asks Fritz to, you know, take him to speak to Hans. And this minute begins with him entering the office. Now, I mean, as we know, he has commandeered Holly's office, which apparently is the perfect location. You know, I always wonder where Takagi's office is, because we never get to see it. You know, it must be in one of the higher floors or something like that. Yeah, we got to see Ellis's office because we got to see his bathroom and, you know, where John ended up leaving his shoes. But we never got to see the CEO's office, which would have been quite fascinating to see what they would have shown us there.
Well, hang on. Whose office did Carl have the meltdown on, you know, where he sort of goes
where he throws things? Where he throws the table?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's in Holly's office, but that's apparently the secretary's station in the office. Because we see that it's in Holly's office, but it must be at the beginning. Like when we saw the office for the first time months and months ago, and you know Holly walks into the office with Ellis following her. So she walks into the office, and her secretary Ginny was sitting there in the front of the office. And then there's like all these different plants and stuff like that. And then it has the second section of that office, which is where Holly, you know, sits. So there are basically two desks in this office, but they're separated by maybe it's like some sort of like partition or wall or something like that in between. You know, that type of thing. So
did we see these delicious fake green plants? Are they fake?
Well, we've seen them before, but they, you know, in passing, we haven't discussed them. If you want to discuss fake plants, you're more than welcome to. I wasn't going to.
Yeah, well, it's just something about fake plants that just, I don't know, they don't make my blood boil, but I just think of all the dust that's accumulated there, or if people, you know, put their bubble gum on, I don't know, I just, it's very tacky. I've always disliked them myself. Unfortunately, you don't see them that much.
Right, but you're talking about fake plants anymore? In movies or fake plants in real life?
Well, this is a documentary, isn't it? Yes, in real life, I don't enjoy them, so I don't enjoy them in fiction either.
No, but maybe these are real ones, because if they're only going to be shooting for a few days, they might actually, you know, bring in real plants, because then what do they care?
Yeah, good point. I think I'm pretty sure they are fake, by the way the light sort of hits the top leaf near the animatronic Santa, maybe.
Could not be
a big issue, but
no, not a big issue at all, but a good point. It's not something I even thought of discussing. So you see, you've taken me places that I wasn't planning on going, but that's fine.
All right, let's move quickly past, sorry.
So Ellis comes into the office, his hands up, you know, as if he's, you know, Fritz is behind him, but Fritz has the gun pointed up. It's not as if his gun is pointed at Ellis's back or anything like that. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to first read through his entire diatribe here, and then we'll try and break it down, because it's silly to stop it midway. Okay, so
great, yep.
He walks into the office and he says, "It's obvious you're not some dumb schmuck up here to snatch a few purses. Am I right?" And Hans responds, "You're very perceptive." So then Ellis continues, "I watch 60 Minutes. I say to myself, these guys are professional. They're motivated. They're happening, i.e. they want something. Now, personally, I couldn't care less about your politics. Maybe you're pissed off at the camel jockeys. Maybe it's the Hebes, Northern Ireland. Ooh. It's none of my business. I figured you're here to negotiate. Am I right?" And then Hans responds, "You're amazing. You figured this all out already? Hey, business is business. You use a gun? I use a fountain pen. What's the difference? Let's put it in my terms. You're here in a hostile takeover. You grab us for some green mail, but you didn't expect some poison pill was going to be running around in the building. Am I right? Hans, Booby, I'm your white knight." And Hans looks at him and says, "I must have missed 60 minutes. What are you saying? The guy upstairs who's f***ing things up? Huh?" And that's pretty much how this minute will end. But there's a lot to be learned from this entire conversation. Obviously, Ellis is the one taking the point in this whole conversation, but the things that he says, wow. Wow, 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 wow. So let's start from the beginning. You know, first of all, now what is your overall impression of this conversation before we get into the nitty-gritty of everything that says there?
This is the most arrogant guy I've ever met. We first see him, he's got his hands up. You're talking about he thinks he's their savior. He's their white knight, as he says later on. He's just this guy who thinks, I'm going to be able to, you know, convince these guys of anything. I'm just going to apply my charm. I'll defray the situation and I can get to the nub of what they want, or I can convince them. I know I can get you what you want. He's just a schwarm. What's the word? A schwami guy? Is that the word? He's just a
suave.
I don't know. I detest a suave. No, more like he's just a dime, a cheat. I don't know. He's very tacky and full of his own chutzpah and arrogance. And I think, yeah, you're not supposed
to. Well, he's full of himself. That's for sure.
Mm.
You know, he is definitely. I mean, we know that he does $1 million or $1 billion deals all the time and stuff like that. So he thinks he just doesn't read Hans very well. You know, he thinks Hans. Well, but it's funny because, you know, he's dealing with theoretically a terrorist. He doesn't know that Hans isn't really a terrorist. Okay. Mm-hmm. But he thinks of him because of the way that Hans is dressed, that he's just a very typical businessman. Now, the irony of it is that is what Hans is. You know, he's here to steal money. He's a you know, high priced or high leveled thief. You know, he's not there in order to really cause terror. He obviously, his whole plan is to cause a lot of confusion, but he's mm-hmm. not there as your typical terrorist. What we would think, I mean, this was pre 9/11, but even post 9/11, no one would classify Hans as a terrorist with what mm-hmm. what his full plan is. His tactics might actually, you know, classify him as a terrorist by the way he does things. But when you look at the plan as a whole, what he's doing here is not a terrorist act. He's just a thief. He's a very clever thief and a very smart one. And obviously he knows a lot about finance and things like that, which we'll also get into in this conversation, because there are a lot of terms that that our good friend Ellis uses here that are business terms. You know, and he thinks that's who he's talking to here. He thinks he's talking to a businessman, but he's not. You know, the whole thing is just very misconstrued from both perspectives. You know, because of the fact that Ellis has no idea that he's in over his head, and we'll get into that a lot more during the course of this week, because this is Ellis week. You know, you whether you wanted it or not, John, you got Ellis week.
Well, he's just deliciously slimy. How many times does he say, "I am right" in this minute? Like 3 or 4? And my right is just, oh, he's slimy.
Yeah.
Just as an aside, when he goes, you know, i.e. they want something, it really reminded me of David Brent in The Office, like using the sort of the cutting the words off, using the diminutives and stuff. And
do you think that David Brent, the character of David Brent, is somewhat based on Ellis? Do you think there's any connection?
Maybe 0.01% or something, but just the way I was remembering how David Brent says, aka, I can make your dreams come true, aka for you, just misusing. Obviously, Ellis is a bit more aware of the English language than Brent is, but
yeah. I mean, his IE is correct. We'll get there.
That's right.
But I did count right now, and he says, am I right 3 times?
So annoying.
In less than a minute. But also, his speech is great. I got to say that. I mean, we're going to break it down. But overall, you know, for someone to theoretically be thinking of all of this on the fly is great.
Yeah.
You know, it says a lot about him based on what he says and how he says it. But, you know, let's start off with his first line. He says, it's obvious you're not some dumb schmuck. Okay. Do you know what a schmuck is?
I always heard, obviously it's a Yiddish word, right? Or
it is a Yiddish German word.
Someone told me is it the foreskin?
It's a term for the penis. That's what it is. A schmuck is a penis.
I thought it was the end of the circumcised that the morning rabbi gets rid of. Okay.
No, it's not the foreskin. Sorry. I mean, they're not really saying, you know, when people use the term, they're not saying you're a penis. What they're saying that someone is really stupid or foolish or obnoxious, sometimes contemptible, detestable. You know, there's a lot of different terminology that you can use when you call someone a schmuck. But the literal term, you know, comes from the Yiddish, which basically means a penis. Okay. In German, what's funny, the word schmuck means jewelry or adornment, which is just really funny because there's no connection whatsoever between the two of those. And sometimes, you know, because it's considered a vulgar term, so a lot of times it's used by calling someone a schmo.
All right.
And some, you know, there are different ways of pronouncing, of spelling schmo. You can spell it S-C-H-M-O-E, S-C-H-M-O, S-H-M-O. So
does
Lenny,
the word, in contemporary modern Hebrew, do you also use the equivalent expression in Hebrew?
No.
For the same sort of meaning?
No. We don't call someone a schmuck. There are a lot of other words that we don't use the word schmuck. Because again, it's a Yiddish word. Just because it's a Yiddish word, and because it's a vulgarity, it's not something that people would use in normal conversation. You know, nowadays a lot of people will just call someone a putz, which is also Yiddish, but it means the same thing.
Right.
You know, it's a similar type of thing. So Lenny Bruce, who was a stand-up comic in the 1960s, he was a Jewish stand-up comic. That when he was arrested in 1962, when he was performing on the West Coast, because back then you weren't allowed to use vulgarities on stage and stuff like that. Apparently, there was an undercover agent who knew Yiddish that they put him in the club in order to be able to determine if the Yiddish terms that he was using were considered profanity. And he would call people schmuck a lot. And he actually, you know, he got arrested for that. Okay. Nowadays, mostly you refer to it, when you refer to someone either as a jerk or an idiot, that's when you would call them a schmuck.
Well, you know what? We have no reason to believe that Alice, like with that name, is Jewish, do we?
And he also, he's first of all, he's not Jewish. He's WASPy, especially the way that he talks here.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
again,
he says capiche as well, like Italian words.
But capiche is Italian. That's not Yiddish.
Exactly. Exactly. He's all over the place. He goes, ain't, you know, he's trying to make himself a man of the street, sort of.
Yes. He's a man of the street, but he's definitely a WASPier. You know,
yeah, no worries.
He's not a,
a goy. He's a goy. He's a goy.
He's a goy. That's for sure.
I love that word. It just sounds so cool.
And do you know that there's a term in bodybuilding that uses the word schmuck?
No, tell me more.
And again, sometimes they'll use the word schmo or schmoes instead, but it describes a person who is often wealthy, but who is less muscular and weaker than bodybuilders. And they pay bodybuilders money for private posing sessions and things like that. So they call them schmuck. It's people who, worship people who have muscles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. All right. So that's the first thing that he says. And the funny thing is he goes to snatch a few purses. So the fact that he makes that comment, he has figured out that they're thieves.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're doing. Yeah, they're here. They're not here to snatch a few purses, but they're here to steal money. So it's very funny that it, fits in the same way there. And, you know, this is his first, am I right? Followed by Hans's response, you're very perceptive. Which is a, you know, Ellis takes it as a real compliment, even though he's being very facetious with his, with the way that Hans is responding here. You know, he doesn't really mean it. He's both pissed and interested all at the same time. You know, by the way that he says this.
Why did Nataki employ him? Surely he's too brash and obnoxious and sort of un-Japanese-like in his...
Well, let's put it this way. I would say that Takagi employed him because he's apparently a very good negotiator. He might be cocky in all that he does, but if he can deliver the goods, that's what they want.
Yeah. I don't know. If you say more than, am I right, in more than an hour...
Am I right? Yeah.
Bida boom, bida bang, bida boom.
Exactly. Then he mentions 60 minutes, which we're not going to go into 60 minutes at length here because if you want to hear all about 60 minutes, you can go back to episode 43 of Planes, Trains, Automobiles, where we discussed 60 minutes in detail. But basically, it's a TV news show that is still running in America. It's been running for over 50 years. It was one of the first news magazines around, and many shows copied their format of the way that they did things. Okay. Then he continues and says, I say to myself, these guys are professional. They're motivated. They're happening, i.e. they want something. So, again, the way that he's talking, first of all, he's talking down to Hans here. You know, I don't think Ellis realizes it, though. I think he's just being himself and doesn't realize that he's being obnoxious and talking down to somebody who he's supposed to theoretically be negotiating with, where, you know, they should be on the same level, or you would think that that's what they would, you know, that they should be.
He thinks he's being cool by, you know, cutting to the chase, you know?
Yeah.
He's getting to the nub of what they want, and he's just over his head.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then he brings up the whole idea of politics. Which goes against what he said before. He says, you know, if they're there to snatch, not to snatch a few purses, so then theoretically he sees they're thieves. But when he talks about politics, so then he is going back to the idea of terrorism, because terrorism usually deals with some sort of form of politics. You know, it doesn't matter what country you're in. If you're dealing with terrorists, there are terrorists who are usually not happy with a particular regime or a particular, you know, country way of life, something like that. You know, and so therefore it does just enter the realm of politics.
So it's about using force or threatening to use it.
Correct.
Murder. Yeah. Threatening to for a political purpose.
Yeah. No, but it's threatening to use. It's threatening to use force or threatening to use power based on the fact that you want something changed within politics because you don't agree with the particular politics.
Yes.
Yes. You know that.
Can I just ask? Just can I ask? So we're on the right page. What so far have they said? These people, the bad guys, what have they said to the employees? Have they said anything yet?
No, they've told them nothing. They said that we're here for something and Takagi didn't want to help out and therefore he won't be joining us for the rest of his life. That's all he says. Yeah. They don't. They haven't given any other indication as to why they're there.
Yep, gotcha.
Because there's no one to negotiate with. So, you know, now Ellis is there to negotiate with them. So maybe he'll be able to do something that no one else was able to figure out beforehand. You never know.
I don't know. Saying I don't care about your politics, it just doesn't seem very perceptive because, I mean, they do seem to care. As you've just said, they've killed their boss or, well, they said they've done it.
Okay, I disagree with you on that because the fact that he says that he couldn't care about your politics means I don't care why you're here. I want to help. He's basically saying I don't care about your politics. If your policies aren't the same as mine, I don't care.
I don't care about them materially, but I can help you achieve them, sort of thing. Or
exactly.
Okay. All right. Exactly. Nice. Okay.
You know, because again, he says you know you're here. First of all, and then he starts rattling off a number of different racial conflicts, I guess you can say. He says, maybe you're pissed off at the camel jockeys, which, have you ever heard the term before, camel jockeys?
I think I actually heard it in, I have, obviously, in real life, unfortunately. But I think in Three Kings, one of them says it as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. That's a movie. So camel jockey is a pejorative slur for someone who of Arabic descent. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I did a search, it's really funny because I actually came across that there are, you know, they do camel races. So a camel jockey is, you know, is someone who races camels. So I thought that was that's funny that the term is not only a pejorative. You know,
we have a state, Queensland in the north of Australia, where, you know, they grow lots of tropical fruits, and we call people from Queensland banana benders because, you know, they quite literally they harvest and pull off the bananas off the trees. But it is a pejorative as well as being descriptive.
And are there people who are banana benders?
Yeah, anyone from Queensland we call a banana bender. It's a pretty lame joke. It's more affectionate than an insult, but it is also a profession they have, of course, because that's where the banana plantations are.
Okay, that makes sense.
I don't think anyone's been offended by being called a banana bender, but
probably not. But I'm assuming camel jockey people have been offended by that comment. And basically, what their term is basically saying is that okay, these are backwards people. You know, by calling an Arab a camel jockey, you're basically saying that, you know, these are people who are still dealing with, they're still living out in the desert and are not part of modern society type of thing. So that's where the pejorative comes from. And then he says, maybe it's the Hebes. Okay.
I'd never heard that before. Obviously, it's obvious who they are. But I never heard that abbreviation before.
I have. Surprisingly. Sorry. Surprisingly, yeah, okay. I don't find it as offensive as some people might, but you know, so a Heeb is a pejorative for someone who is Jewish. It's a shortened version of the word Hebrew. Okay, so let's put it this way: he could have said a lot worse than saying the Heebs in this, but it it's befitting of him. I mean, you asked earlier, is it possible that Ellis is Jewish? By the fact that he says, maybe you're pissed off at the Hebes, my assumption is he's not.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound that way by the way that he says that. Then he goes, Northern Ireland. Now, until I watched this with subtitles, I never understood what he said. I didn't know that he was saying Northern Ireland. I always thought he said Nahala or something like that. And I was like, what is he talking about? Because he slurs it as he says it.
Hmm.
Okay.
Seemed pretty clear to me.
Well, it's clear when you're looking at it with subtitles.
Oh, can we raise something up? Did you notice at approximately second 41, there's some very bad ADR? You can hear just before he says, am I right? It's like a really echoey, it suddenly becomes like an really echoey room when he delivers that line.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, but I hear what you're saying there. I mean, I also love his hand motions as he's talking. You know, he counts off with his fingers and he puts his, you know, he like makes okay sound symbols with his hands as he's doing it also. You know, things like that.
As despicable as he is, I delight in watching him. Like, he's just so good.
Yeah, great for sure. For sure. There's no question about that. This, you know, this movie would not be the same without Ellis. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
So Northern Ireland, what do you know about Northern Ireland?
I know that it is part of the United Kingdom, not Great Britain. It has, this was in 1988, so it was a full 10 years or so before the Good Friday appeals, where it's sort of some of the terrorist activity was put under wraps that we still enjoy today. But it was still quite a tense time with the IRA in the Northern Ireland. Tell me more. I don't know what it was like.
Do you know when Ireland was partitioned?
1927 or something?
Very close to 1920.
Ah, damn.
Yeah. In 1920, they decided that in 1921, they're going to partition Ireland between Northern and Southern Ireland, basically. So you have the six northeastern counties of Ireland that are mostly populated by unionists who were people who wanted to remain in the United Kingdom. Right, many of them were Protestant descendants of colonists from Great Britain, but the majority of Southern Ireland, which in 1922 became the Irish Free State, they were Irish nationalists and Catholics who wanted an independent Ireland.
Hmm.
And even now, 100 years later, okay, the people from Northern Ireland see themselves as British. And everyone in the southern part of Ireland think of themselves as being Irish. Even though most people still refer to themselves, there's a large minority of people that refer to themselves as Ulsters, which is the term for Northern Ireland.
They love the orange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not going to get too much into it, but there was a lot of violence. You know, be from the 1920s onward, where hundreds of people were killed, and there were a lot of refugees, and you know, there's a lot of infighting between the two sides as to whether they should remain part of England or whether they should be given their own independence. And as you mentioned, in 1998, which is, as you mentioned, 10 years later after this movie takes place, they had the Good Friday Agreement, which dealt with disarmament and the attempt for normalization on security issues. But there are still problems there. There's still sporadic violence and things like that. It hasn't completely stopped. Okay.
I think the big problem at the moment is after Brexit that it's reignited these problems, because they may have to have a customs border on, you know, the border of the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland.
Right.
That's something they could have done without. So it's reignited a lot of this tension about.
Okay, that makes sense.
Its future, yeah.
It makes sense that they misstepped there, I guess you can say.
Yeah, I don't like to say too much about this because you should have Niall McGowan on the program. I just feel very murky wading into these waters. Yeah.
Well, if Niall is listening, he can feel free to send us his opinion on it. Also, we'd love to hear someone's opinion that actually knows what they're talking about. Not like the two of us.
Alice doesn't give a crap. Alice doesn't care anyway.
No, Alice doesn't care about anything. Alice cares about Alice.
Amen.
You know, he doesn't care about anyone else. And as a side point, if he's able to help everyone else around him, so, you know, he would get extra points for it. You know, that's his extra credit. His credit, he's trying to help himself. And if by helping himself, he helps all the other hostages, great. You know, maybe he'll get a medal. But that's it.
And wants to help himself to a seat, doesn't he?
Correct. He's
just walking in, yep. No care, doesn't even look behind him at Fritz or whatever.
Right, not at all.
Yeah. Once he's, yeah.
Right. And then he ends this first part of his conversation by saying, I figure you're here to negotiate. And then we get his second, am I right?
Am I right?
And then we get Hans's response, you're amazing. You figured this all out already. And do you think Hans knows that he's high?
Maybe. My question is more, doesn't he catch on that Gruber's being sarcastic?
No, not at all.
He just doesn't give a shit. He just doesn't care. It emboldens
I don't think he cares at all because I think, because again, he's high. That's first of all. And second of all, he's looking at this and saying, you know, I'm here to help. You know, he's not thinking about the repercussions.
Yeah. Just the expression that Alan Rickman gives him, though, like, genius, you figured this out all yourself.
Right.
I don't know. It's hard not to take, I don't know, even if I've never done cocaine, so I don't know sense.
No. I've told my story in the past, just the one time I got drunk, and I do recall from that incident, you know, that you do think that what you're doing is rational. So I would assume that someone who is high on cocaine is there, you know, that idea is compounded even more, maybe even tenfold, if not a hundredfold. So who knows? So anyone out there who's familiar with it, feel free to let us know either anonymously or not. You know,
but don't send us anything in the mail.
No, not in the mail. Email. I don't have a PO box for people to send me stuff.
Good.
And then our good friend Ellis continues with his conversation, and he goes, hey, business is business. Use a gun, I use a fountain pen. Now, first of all, I love this analogy. It's great.
Yeah,
it's great. And in some ways it's right. You know, because
in Last Crusade, remember, he goes, the pen is mightier than the sword.
Yes, that is correct.
You know who he really reminds me of? Who he really reminds me of? His delivery of, hey, business is business. What's the difference? It just reminds me of Macaulay Culkin when he goes, lady, I'm a 10-year-old boy. Would I be alone at home? I don't think so. It's sort of that same mock bravado. That's what I thought of.
You always seem to bring our conversations back to Home Alone. You did that in Plain Shit and Automobiles also.
It's the most perfect movie ever made, apart from Dirty Harry. But anyway.
So you should be doing that one as a Movies by Minute.
It's already been done, hasn't it?
Has it? I don't remember. There are so many.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
I don't remember.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all. Why interrupt her? Why do you feel you're interrupting?
I don't know. I feel like I've had cocaine or something, and I haven't. I feel like Alice just butting in.
Ah, is that what it is?
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. Now, at this point, Ellis changes the conversation and starts talking about a real life kind of business tactic, negotiation, stuff like that. Because what he says here is, what's the difference? Let's put it in my terms. You're here in a hostile takeover. You grab us for some green mail. Now, I never thought about the fact. And then he continues and says, but you didn't expect some poison pill was going to be running around in the building. Do you know that all three of these terms are business terms? Hostile takeover, greenmail, yes. And poison pill?
Yes. Only because many years ago, a decade ago, when I did my law degree, we had to do a corporations law module. And so I remember each of those terms. And plus, I've seen enough 80s movies like Big Business and Secret of My Success.
Right, I was going to mention Secret of My Success for the hostile takeover, but yeah. I'd never heard the term green mail or poison pill before in this context. I always just assumed poison pill is a, you know, he's just using that as a phrase of, you know, that not necessarily that it is something that denotes some sort of business thing. So what is a hostile takeover? Do you know?
Well, generally, someone buys a lot of stock or threatens to buy it or give the impression to buy it so they're going to take it over. So the existing majority shareholder who has control of the company, they think they have to buy shares quickly to maintain their dominance, the majority, basically. Or is that the green mail? Threatening to buy stock or looking like you're buying stock. And so
no, that's a green mail, I believe. Current...
Okay, nice. All right.
Right. So a hostile takeover is also known as a corporate raid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it allows a bidder to take over a target company whose management is unwilling to agree to a merger or a takeover. And what they do is they find a way to approach the shareholders directly instead of trying to get approval from the officers or directors of the company. And the reason that it's hostile is because the target company's board can try to reject the offer. But once they have more control of the stock, they have the ability to make changes. Right. Okay. I mean, there's a number of different ways that you can do this. I'm not going to go into all of them because I can't say that I 100% understood them. I'm not really a management expert. or a business management expert. There are ways of there are defense tactics against it. There's something within the Clayton Act which you can try to seek an injunction, which can try and stop it and stuff like that.
I think some jurisdictions would have percentages beyond which you can't buy in one sort of transaction or in a period. Yeah.
Right.
And a poison pill is someone who just...
Well, wait, we didn't get there yet. We'll go one at a time. Okay. We'll go one at a time. So first of all, with the hostile takeover, how many hostile takeovers do you think have been recorded in the business world as of 2018?
In the business world in the US or the whole world? Or...
I don't know. That's a very good question.
I'd say multiple hundreds.
Okay, so according to Wikipedia, there have been 1,788 hostile takeovers that have had a total value of $28.86 billion.
Wow.
That have occurred. Okay, so greenmail is what the second term. It's the action of purchasing enough shares in a firm to challenge a firm's leadership with the threat of a hostile takeover, to force the target company to buy the purchased shares back at a premium in order to prevent the potential takeover. So the idea is that you say, okay, I'm going to be buying all of these stocks, and if you don't want me to take over, you have to buy them back, but you have to pay me, you have to buy them from me at a lower price.
Right. I didn't think that component was necessary. It just meant you're going to be forced to buy them from whatever source you can at a higher price.
Right. Now,
but yeah, well,
it's apparently a combination of the terms blackmail and greenback, right? And again, it's connected to corporate raiding and hostile takeovers and stuff like that. So, it's somewhat a ransom. You're basically paying a ransom here in order to to make sure that doesn't happen. I mean, I found a whole bunch of different examples of greenmail that go back, you know, through the 80s and stuff like that. We're not going to get into them because it's a little too complex for what we're trying to do here. But if anyone has seen the movie Wall Street, one of the things that they do here is greenmailing. Okay, the character played the character of Sir Larry Wildman, played by Terrence Stamp, refers to Gordon Gekko, played by Michael Douglas, as a two-bit pirate and a green mailer, because that's the type of things that he would do. And then we get to our third business term, poison pill. So you were starting to say before that you know what a poison pill is?
Your explanation of green mail preceding a hostile take of means I'm not quite sure I know anymore, but is it just someone refusing to sell?
It's a defensive tactic used by a corporation's board of directors to stop a takeover.
Right, okay. And that's McLean, is it?
Yes.
Yes.
That's right. Because they basically can have either an option or a warrant attached to existing shares, and this it was invented in 1982 by the lawyer Martin Lipton, who was part of the Wachtell Lipton Rosen and Katz firm, because they saw that there were a lot of hostile takeovers being done. And they became popular in order to try and stop it. It's because it's a poison pill that is physically carried by various spies throughout history. You know, the idea that what spies would take in order to not have to be interrogated by the enemy. So the idea is that if you use this, it might not be to your best interest, but it's still better than letting your company being taken over via green mail.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So they claim that for every company that had a poison pill which successfully resisted a hostile takeover, there were more than 20 companies that accepted the takeover offers. Which means that the poison pills were effective if you wanted to use them, but most people in the end chose not to use them. And during the coronavirus pandemic, there was a resurgence of the popularity of poison pills in the world, because stock prices began to plummet due to the pandemic. And, you know, the companies turned to their shareholders' rights plans to defend against opportunistic takeover offers. And in March of 2020, there were actually 10 U.S. companies that adopted new poison pills, which set a new record.
Hmm.
If you want to talk about recent history, everything that happened with Elon Musk trying to take over Twitter, okay, that was stopped by the idea of a poison pill. Because the Twitter's board of directors unanimously enacted a shareholder rights plan, which was able to hold it off.
Wow.
Yep.
Thanks for making that topical, bringing it to something.
Well, it's not me that made it topical. It's Elon Musk and our good friends at Twitter that made that topical. Not me. I can't take
Twitter
credit for
has
that.
Too many. Can you imagine Elon Musk saying, "Twitter has too many gatekeepers"? Am I right? I can't do his accent. Sorry.
Yeah. And then he goes again, "Am I right?" This is the third one.
"Am I right?"
And he goes, "Hans, Booby, I'm your white knight." So what do you know what Booby is?
I'm just going to use my schoolboy German. Is it like brother or something, or baby? Bübchen? Bübchen?
No. It's another Yiddish word. Though? It's a Yiddish word for grandma.
Oh, okay. All right. I was sort of on the right track.
Yeah.
Okay. Grandmother.
It's a grandmother. Now, I had a bubby. That was the idea. You know, it's booby bubby. It's pronounced different ways, but it's the same thing. Sometimes it's bubala. Bubala is like my, bubala. You know, you would say, you know, my love, but it's more of a grandparent saying that to a grandchild type of thing.
Why is he throwing around all these Yiddish words? Were they cool in the 80s on the West Coast? Or
I have a feeling that the writers just wanted to be topical here.
Ah, okay.
No, but also it sounds funny that, because also by him using this term, by saying Hans Booby, he's putting himself above Hans here.
Right.
You know, again, he's showing how full of himself he is with the way that he's saying this. And then he calls himself his white knight. So what do you know about the term white knight?
Nothing other than it's, you know, I'm your savior. I'm coming in on a, maybe the white refers to the steed, the horse, you know, and I'm your savior coming on a horse to save you. I don't know, white savior complex? I don't know. Tell me more.
Okay, so a white knight is a mythological figure and literary stock character that are portrayed alongside a black knight. They are diametric opposites. Usually the white knight represents a heroic warrior fighting against evil, with the role in medieval literature being represented by a knight-errant type of thing.
Holy Grail.
More or less.
Monty Python.
Yes.
Nice.
Right, and sometimes you'd have white horse and black horse. The white color, you know, symbolizes innocence, illumination, open-heartedness, and gladness and things like that. But there's a business term that's known as a white knight, and that's what he's referring to here. Which, again, I never knew this before I started looking into it. So the term white knight is a modern-day parlance to mean any kind of savior, although it is specifically used in a business context to describe a person or corporation that saves another company from a hostile takeover and acquires its assets. The white knight is also used as derogatory slang, often by men's rights activists, to refer to men who are trying to curry the favor of women by protecting them, alongside other similar terms such as a simp or whipped. The usage of the term implies that men, when doing nice things for women, are motivated only by sexual desires. Which basically, what he's saying here is his motivations as a white knight are not as pure as one would think. You know, he's saying to Hans, I'm your white knight, but, you know, my motivation is not to help you, it's to help me.
Do you think the screenwriters were aware of that that connotation of white knight, both in the business? Yeah.
Which one? The connotation that is related to the business world, or the connotation of the men's rights activists?
I think more just that it's a loaded term for him saying, "I have ulterior motives for helping you."
Yeah, I have a feeling that they did, because if you look at it from if you're looking at the fact that they're using all these business terms, so the white knight is also a business term.
Yes. So and using them correctly as well.
I would lump them all together there. You know, Bubby is not, but all the rest of the terms that we're dealing with here, hostile takeover, green mail, poison pill, and white knight are all business terms. And that is the type of things that our good friend Ellis would use, because he is bare bones and all. He's a businessman. That's what he's there for. So I think they have an idea.
Hang on, did you say Bubby means grandmother?
Yes.
Not grandfather?
Grandmother.
Wow, okay.
Well, you thought I said grandfather?
No, I just thought Alice is really negging him, really giving him a bit of shit.
Yes.
You know? Grandmother, not even grandfather. Yeah.
No, but a Bubby is something that's, you know, that's warm and accepting and things like that. It's not... You know, if you would call him a grandfather, you know, it would be a little harsher to use that type of terminology.
Oh, okay. I was just talking the times, you know, calling someone a woman in a way. I know it's 1988,
right.
Not 1948.
Correct. But, no, yeah, but think about it. Think about it from your perspective. Someone would say that you're like your grandmother or you're like your grandfather. You know, there are very different connotations of that. And, you know, if someone would say that you're like your grandmother, they're saying it's more warm and fuzzy. You know, your grandfather is not.
I guess so. Yeah, good point. I suppose if you're driving slowly or something. Yeah.
Right.
Come on, grandma.
Exactly. Things like that. Yeah.
Fair right. enough.
And at this point, once again, we'll go back to the to Hans's response where he just like looks back and forth and says, wait a second, I missed something here. Now, I wonder if Hans gets all of the business terminology that he's using here. Because in the middle of this conversation, yeah. Hans and Carl both make eye contact with one another. And it seems as if they're both looking at each other like, where is this going? Now, what is this guy trying to tell us?
Now, maybe they're thrown by Bubby.
That could be.
Yeah.
That definitely could be.
And oh my God, I just noticed he hits Carl, like, you know, punches him in the shoulder lightheartedly.
Yes, yeah? that's right at the end. He comes over and you know, like, yeah. Like fist bumps him on the side of his shoulder type of thing.
A lot of gumption. A lot of gumption to do yes. that.
Yeah, I mean, again, everything that he's doing here shows that he has a lot of gumption. I mean, again, the fact that you know, Hans then says to him, I must have missed 60 minutes. What are you saying? And at this point, that's when he, you know, takes his fist and bumps Carl's shoulder. And he goes, the guy upstairs is up, huh? And as he's saying this, he like he makes himself at home. He's sitting down. He starts sitting down in the chair. You know, he wasn't invited to sit in the chair. He's like, okay, I'm ready to go in the chair.
What's the henchman's name? Is it Fritz? Who's the guy Which with one? The AK-47?
The guy standing in the back, Fritz.
The Fabio yes. guy, yeah, Fritz. Yeah, and they're all just looking at each other, throwing all three of the bad guys, throwing each other furtive looks. I guess they're saying, you know, should we listen to what he has to say or should we just kill him? Yeah, maybe they, I think you're right. I think they are a bit perplexed with these business terms and everything.
Yeah.
Whether he can actually help them, yeah.
Right. Who knows? And again, maybe I've seen this movie so many times and this is the first time that I've actually thought about the fact that he's talking about business terms. I thought he was just talking in general.
Yeah. And the way he enters the room, like if this movie was made today, Fritz would like with short temper, you know, nudge him with the AK-47, like get in the room.
No, but he's voluntarily coming here. This isn't something that he, you know, it's not as if Fritz is dragging him in and saying, okay, the boss wants to see you.
That is true. But also if someone comes up to you and like looks like they're going to help you, you'd be like suspicious or abrupt with them. I mean, I wonder how much of the story he's told Fritz anything. Has he just said, I need to speak to your boss because I've got something important to tell him? Do you reckon that's all he's told Fritz? Yeah, yeah, cool.
Yeah, I don't think he said, I need to talk to your boss because I have a great idea. He's like, yeah, all right, sure. sit back down on the rock. You know, I don't think so. All right. So do you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get to the script?
No, not really. No. Apart from the obvious, now that we have you in a public forum, Rob, have you ever been part of a hostile takeover?
No.
And would you tell me if you have been?
No. No. Have you? Never. Well, you learned about it. Never been you studied it in to be a lawyer, so, you know. You might have had to do
it didn't retain
you might have had to do scenarios and stuff like that.
It's a good thing I never did. I just practiced, you know, conveyancing and property law, because I was just schooled by you on these definitions.
Yeah, I don't give accreditation. Sorry, you can't get course credit from my podcast. I'm sorry.
Maybe you can validate my parking or something. Anyway, we'll talk about that later.
We'll try. We'll try. We'll see. We'll see how long you're here for. The first 3 hours are free. How's that?
Nice. Tell us about the script. Tell us
okay,
about the script.
Okay. So, I mean, this minute is dialogue heavy, as we all know. So there's a few minor discrepancies in the way that the conversation goes along. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to mention a few changes here. So in the script, he doesn't use the word schmuck. He calls him a thug. He says, it's obvious you're not some dumb thug up here to snatch a few purses. And then in the script itself, it says, Carl looks at Ellis and then at Hans as if to say, let me plug this asshole right now. But Hans is either amused curious or bored enough to shake his head and turns back to Ellis. So I love that description because, you know, Alan Rickman gets that perfectly.
Well, he's definitely not amused, is he?
He's somewhat amused.
Very internal.
I think he's somewhat amused to hear what Ellis is trying, you know, what Ellis's idea is.
Yeah. Amused in the sense of curious, though, more than...
I think amused in the sense that more than curious, but amused that this guy actually has the gall to come in here. Let's give him the stage and hear what he has to say.
Yeah. Do you like the change of schmuck instead of thug?
I don't think it makes a difference either way.
Schmuck's better.
I think schmuck works better for Ellis. Because a thug, you would think that he's referring to someone who's being more brutal. Yeah. A schmuck just means an idiot.
Yeah, that's right. An idiot, yeah. Or someone out of the head. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay, then after Hans says to him, you're very perceptive. So it says, Ellis, flattered, says, I read the papers. I watch 60 Minutes. So they, you know,
no, you don't.
They mentioned the newspaper there, but, you know, they took that out. And instead of saying, I couldn't care less about your politics, it says, I don't care about your politics, which it's pretty much the same thing. But I think by saying I don't care is a harsher thing as opposed to say I couldn't care less.
I agree. Yeah, I think you're right.
And instead of saying it's none of my business, he says that's none of my business. Again, they're minor things. And he doesn't have – the IE is not in here. It says they're happening. They want something. There's no IE.
They're happening.
And I wonder if that's an ad lib from – Hart Buffner or not?
Yeah, happening. It's such like a cheesy 60s sort of word. You don't think that would still be around in the 80s.
Yeah, true.
Like, you're a fab. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guests will give their top five Die Hard doppelganger films. So what have you got for us, John?
All right. We'll start from the bottom, yeah? Number five.
Yes.
I have Cliffhanger, or as I call it, Die Hard on a Carabiner. You a fan of that movie?
Yes, very much. I love that movie.
Number four is Die Hard on a Rock. I think you can guess that movie.
Could it be The Rock?
The Rock. You got it. Third would be Die Hard on a Plane. Which is
Snakes on a Plane. Snakes on a Plane. I'm just kidding.
Snakes on a Plane. Number two and one hard.
Wait, that was your first one?
No, Die Hard 2 was Die Hard on a Plane.
Ah, okay.
Hard, the sequel. Boom, boom, tish. Number two, have you ever seen Black Sunday?
Yes.
With Bruce Dern. Yeah, great movie. Die Hard on a Blimp. I call that one.
Okay.
And number one is Broken Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie.
Die Hard on a stealth bomber.
Well, I thought more appropriately we call it Die Hard on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Ooh, that's great.
Because every one of them is featured, I think. Yeah, definitely a train, definitely a plane, and the car. Yeah, I really like Broken Arrow. I don't know if it's... I don't know how it stacks up these days, but so those are my top five.
Well, let's put it this way. John Travolta is always a fun villain, but, you know, John Travolta versus Christian Slater or vice versa, I don't know. Not really sure.
Anyway, yeah, those are my five.
All right, great. Those are great choices. Thank you very much for that. So you want to tell people where they can find JBAM?
Please find me, my podcast, Dirty Harry Minute. Just go to dirtyharryminute.com. And we finished the movie some time ago, but we periodically add new episodes. And we're going to do one shortly on the Dirty Harry Bollywood remake, Kun Kun. So look forward to that in the next few months.
Oh, wow. Cool. Sounds like fun. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. All you do is a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, or you can go directly to my website and find me there, which is movierobminute.com. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!